Chapter 78. Festivities are held in honor of Nicholas, who suddenly withdraws himself from the society of Mr. Vincent Crummles and his theatrical companions. Mr. Vincent Crummles was no sooner acquainted with the public announcement which Nicholas had made relative to the probability of his shortly ceasing to be a member of the company than he evinced many tokens of grief and consternation, and, in the extremity of his despair, even held out certain vague promises of a speedy improvement, not only in the amount of his regular salary, but also in the contingent emoluments appertaining to his authorship. Finding Nicholas bent upon quitting the society, for he had now determined that, even if no further tidings came from Newman, he would, at all hazards, ease his mind by repairing to London, and ascertaining the exact position of his sister, Mr. Crummles was fain to content himself by calculating the chances of his coming back again, and taking prompt and energetic measures to make the most of him before he went away. "Let me see," said Mr. Crummles, taking off his outlaw's wig, the better to arrive at a cool-headed view of the whole case. "Let me see. This is Wednesday night. We'll have posters out the first thing in the morning, announcing positively your last appearance for tomorrow. But perhaps it may not be my last appearance, you know," said Nicholas. "Unless I am summoned away, I should be sorry to inconvenience you by leaving before the end of the week." "So much the better," returned Mr. Crummles. "We can have positively your last appearance on Thursday, re-engagement for one night more on Friday, and, yielding to the wishes of numerous influential patrons who were disappointed in obtaining seats on Saturday, that ought to bring three very decent houses." "Then I am to make three last appearances, am I?" inquired Nicholas, smiling. "Yes," rejoined the manager, scratching his head with an air of some vexation. "Three is not enough, and it's very bungling and irregular not to have more, but if we can't help it, we can't, so there's no use in talking. A novelty would be very desirable. You couldn't sing a comic song on the pony's back, could you?"
No, replied Nicholas, "I couldn't indeed."
"It has drawn money before now," said Mr. Crummles, with a look of disappointment. "What do you think of a brilliant display of fireworks?"
That it would be rather expensive," replied Nicholas, dryly.
18 pence would do it," said Mr. Crummles. "You on the top of a pair of steps with the phenomenon in an attitude, farewell, on the transparency behind, and 9 people at the wings with a squib in each hand all a dozen, and a half going off at once. It would be very grand, awful from the front, quite awful."
As Nicholas appeared by no means impressed with the solemnity of the proposed effect, but, on the contrary, received the proposition in the most irreverent manner, and laughed at it very heartily, Mr. Crummles abandoned the project in its birth, and gloomily observed that they must make up the best bill they could with combats and hornpipes, and so stick to the legitimate drama. For the purpose of carrying this object into instant execution, the manager at once repaired to a small dressing room adjacent, where Mrs. Crummles was then occupied in exchanging the habiliments of a melodramatic empress for the ordinary attire of matrons in the 19th century. And with the assistance of this lady, and the accomplished Mrs. Crudden, who had quite a genius for making out bills, being a great hand at throwing in the notes of admiration, and knowing from long experience exactly where the largest capitals ought to go, he seriously applied himself to the composition of the poster.
"Hago!" sighed Nicholas, as he threw himself back in the prompter's chair, after telegraphing the needful directions to Smike, who had been playing a meager tailor in the interlude.
with one skirt to his coat, and a little pocket handkerchief with a large hole in it, and a woolen nightcap, and a red nose, and other distinctive marks peculiar to tailors on the stage. Hago, I wish all this were over. Apostrophe, over, Mr. Johnson. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated a female voice behind him, in a kind of plaintive surprise. It was an ungallant speech, certainly, apostrophe, said Nicholas, looking up to see who the speaker was, and recognizing Miss Snevellicci. I would not have made it, if I had known you had been within hearing. Apostrophe, what a dear, that Mr. Digby is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Snevellicci, as the tailor went off on the opposite side, at the end of the piece, with great applause.
Smike's theatrical name was Digby.
I'll tell him presently, for his gratification, that you said so, apostrophe, returned Nicholas. Oh, you naughty thing! Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Miss Snevellicci. I don't know, though, that I should much mind his knowing my opinion of him. With some other people, indeed, it might be apostrophe here. Miss Snevellicci stopped, as though waiting to be questioned. But no questioning came, for Nicholas was thinking about more serious matters. How kind it is of you, apostrophe, resumed Miss Snevellicci, after a short silence, to sit waiting here for him night after night, no matter how tired you are, and taking so much pains with him, and doing it all with as much delight and readiness, as if he were coining gold by it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he well deserves all the kindness I can show him, and a great deal more, apostrophe, said Nicholas. He is the most grateful, single-hearted, affectionate creature that ever breathed. Apostrophe, so odd too, apostrophe, remarked Miss Snevellicci, isn't he? Apostrophe, God help him, and those who have made him so. He is indeed, apostrophe, rejoined Nicholas, shaking his head. He is such a devilish close chap, apostrophe, said Mr. Fowler, who had come up a little before, and now joined in the conversation. Nobody can ever get anything out of him. Apostrophe, what should they get out of him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Nicholas, turning round with some abruptness. Zooks! What a fire-eater you are, Johnson! Apostrophe, returned Mr. Fowler, pulling up the heel of his dancing shoe. I'm only talking of the natural curiosity of the people here, to know what he has been about all his life. Apostrophe, poor fellow, it is pretty plain, I should think, that he has not the intellect, to have been about anything of much importance to them or anybody else, apostrophe, said Nicholas. Eh, apostrophe, rejoined the actor, contemplating the effect of his face in the lamp reflector, but that involves the whole question, you know. Apostrophe, what question? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Nicholas. Why, the who he is, and what he is, and how you two, who are so different, came to be such close companions, apostrophe, replied Mr. Fowler, delighted with the opportunity of saying something disagreeable. That's in everybody's mouth. Apostrophe, the everybody of the theater, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Nicholas. Contemptuously. In it and out of it too, apostrophe, replied the actor. Why, you know, Lenville says apostrophe, I thought I had silenced him effectually, apostrophe, interrupted Nicholas, reddening. Perhaps you have, apostrophe, rejoined the immovable Mr. Fowler. If you have, he said this, before he was silenced. Lenville says that you're a regular stick of an actor, and that it's only the mystery about you that has caused you to go down with the people here, and that Crummles keeps it up for his own sake, though Lenville says he don't believe there's anything at all in it, except you're having got into a scrape and run away from somewhere, for doing something or other. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Nicholas, forcing a smile. That's a part of what he says, apostrophe, added Mr. Fowler. I mention it as the friend of both parties, and in strict confidence. I don't agree with him, you know. He says he takes Digby, to be more knave than fool, and old sluggers, who does the heavy business, you know. He says that when he delivered messages at Covent Garden the season before last, there used to be a pickpocket hovering about the coach stand who had exactly the face of Digby. Though, as he very properly says, Digby may not be the same, but only his brother, or some near relation. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Nicholas again. Yes, apostrophe, said Mr. Fowler, with undisturbed calmness, that's what they say. I thought I'd tell you, because really you ought to know. Oh, here's this blessed phenomenon at last. Ugh, you little imposition, I should like to quite ready, my darling, humbug, ring up, Mrs. G, comma, and let the favorite wake 'em. Apostrophe, uttering in a loud voice such of the latter allusions as were complimentary to the unconscious phenomenon, and giving the rest in a confidential aside to Nicholas, Mr. Fowler followed the ascent of the curtain with his eyes, regarded with a sneer the reception of Miss Crummles as the maiden, and, falling back a step or two, to advance with the better effect, uttered a preliminary howl, and went on chattering his teeth, and brandishing his tin tomahawk as the Indian savage. So these are some of the stories they invent about us, and bandy from mouth to mouth. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thought Nicholas. If a man would commit an inexpiable offense against any society, large or small, let him be successful. They will forgive him any crime but that. Apostrophe, you surely don't mind what that malicious creature says, Mr. Johnson? Apostrophe, apostrophe, observed Miss Snevellicci in her most winning tones. Not I, apostrophe, replied Nicholas. If I were going to remain here, I might think it worth my while to embroil myself. As it is, let them talk till they are hoarse. But here, apostrophe, added Nicholas, as Mike approached, here comes the subject of a portion of their good nature, so let he and I say good night together. Apostrophe, no, I will not let either of you say anything of the kind, apostrophe, returned Miss Snevellicci. You must come home and see Mama, who only came to Portsmouth today, and is dying to behold you. Led, my dear, persuade Mr. Johnson. Apostrophe, oh, I'm sure, apostrophe, returned Miss Ledrook, with considerable vivacity. If you can't persuade him, apostrophe, Miss Ledrook said no more, but intimated, by a dexterous playfulness, that if Miss Snevellicci couldn't persuade him, nobody could. Mr. and Mrs. Lillivick have taken lodgings in our house, and share our sitting room for the present, apostrophe, said Miss Snevellicci. Won't that induce you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, surely, apostrophe, returned Nicholas, I can require no possible inducement beyond your invitation. Apostrophe, oh no. I dare say, apostrophe, rejoined Miss Snevellicci. And Miss Ledrook said, upon my word. Apostrophe, apostrophe, upon which Miss Snevellicci, I said that Miss Ledrook was a giddy thing, and Miss Ledrook said that Miss Snevellicci needn't color up quite so much. And Miss Snevellicci beat Miss Ledrook, and Miss Ledrook beat Miss Snevellicci. Come, apostrophe, said Miss Ledrook, it's high time we were there, or we shall have poor Mrs. Snevellicci thinking that you have run away with her daughter, Mr. Johnson, and then we should have a pretty to-do. Apostrophe, my dear Led, apostrophe, remonstrated Miss Snevellicci, how you do talk. Apostrophe, Miss Ledrook made no answer, but taking Smike's arm in hers, left her friend and Nicholas, to follow at their pleasure, which it pleased them, or rather pleased Nicholas, who had no great fancy for a tete-a-tete under the circumstances, to do at once. There were not wanting matters of conversation, when they reached the street, for it turned out that Miss Snevellicci had a small basket to carry home, and Miss Ledrook a small bandbox, both containing such minor articles of theatrical costume as the lady performers usually carried to and fro every evening. Nicholas would insist upon carrying the basket, and Miss Snevellicci would insist upon carrying it herself, which gave rise to a struggle, in which Nicholas captured the basket and the bandbox likewise. Then Nicholas said that he wondered what could possibly be inside the basket, and attempted to peep in, whereat Miss Snevellicci screamed, and declared that, if she thought he had seen, she was sure she should faint away. This declaration was followed by a similar attempt on the bandbox, and similar demonstrations on the part of Miss Ledrook, and then both ladies vowed that they wouldn't move a step further until Nicholas had promised that he wouldn't offer to peep again. At last Nicholas pledged himself to betray no further curiosity, and they walked on. Both ladies giggling very much, and declaring that they never had seen such a wicked creature in all their born days, never. Lightening the way with such pleasantry as this, they arrived at the tailor's house in no time, and here they made quite a little party, there being present besides Mr. Lillivick and Mrs. Lillivick, not only Miss Snevellicci's mamma, but her papa also. And an uncommonly fine man Miss Snevellicci's papa was, with a hook nose, and a white forehead, and curly black hair, and high cheekbones, and altogether quite a handsome face, only a little pimply, as though with drinking. He had a very broad chest at Miss Snevellicci's papa, and he wore a threadbare blue dress coat buttoned with gilt buttons tied across it. And he no sooner saw Nicholas come into the room, than he whipped the two forefingers of his right hand in between the two center buttons, and sticking his other arm gracefully akimbo seemed to say, "Now, here I am, my buck, and what have you got to say to me?" Such was, and in such an attitude sat Miss Snevellicci's papa, who had been in the profession ever since he had first played the 10-year-old imps in the Christmas pantomimes, who could sing a little, dance a little, fence a little, act a little, and do everything a little, but not much, who had been sometimes in the ballet, and sometimes in the chorus, at every theater in London, who was always selected in virtue of his figure, to play the military visitors and the speechless nobleman, who always wore a smart dress, and came on arm in arm with a smart lady in short petticoats, and always did it too with such an air, that people in the pit had been several times known to cry out bravo! Under the impression that he was somebody. Such was Miss Snevellicci's papa, upon whom some envious persons cast the imputation that he occasionally beat Miss Snevellicci's mamma, who was still a dancer, with a neat little figure and some remains of good looks, and who now sat, as she danced, being rather too old for the full glare of the footlights, in the background. To these good people Nicholas was presented with much formality. The introduction being completed, Miss Snevellicci's papa, who was scented with rum and water, said that he was delighted to make the acquaintance of a gentleman so highly talented, and furthermore remarked that there hadn't been such a hit made, no, not since the first appearance of his friend Mr. Glavormily at the Cobourg. "You have seen him, sir?" said Miss Snevellicci's papa. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.